It's a bad idea, fairy, you know?
We're going to talk about stuff and things.
Stuff and things.
So, Mark, what's the record for most time in the studio without actually producing it?
You're looking at it.
No, this is all being recorded, so he's going to use this for cold opens. Do you want me to kick it off with my busted internet today, or?
Mark's like, please don't let the guy with 50% throughput host. Do you know how much more work that is for me?
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Direct Connect. Happy to have three of my cohorts with me today. Today, we have a conversation about internal controls versus compliance. Or is it even versus? I'm not sure that's even the right verb. But with all the push now for internal controls, is there a risk that we go too far and forget that we actually have to still be compliant with the standards?
No, I mean, they both have their place, right? The internal controls is, you know, some type of mechanism, be it, you know, procedural, technical, some type of mechanism in place to ensure that an action occurs. Whether that's an action that's also compliance related or not, depends. But I think in a lot of cases, yeah, that we've seen entities implement internal controls to go about ensuring compliance is there. From the other perspective, I mean, compliance is there as a regulatory mechanism to ensure that required actions are occurring at the entities. So that's kind of a federal control, federally mandated control. I've often heard the standards themselves be identified as internal controls. So I think you've obviously got a lot of overlap there. Ultimately, though, I would say, can you be compliant without internal controls? Yes. Can you ensure things happen without internal controls? Maybe. So I don't know. I tend to say maybe compliance gets the edge here, but a lot of overlap.
So Nick, a hypothetical, maybe not too hypothetical, but if the audit focus shifts to controls and perhaps not looking as deeply at performance audits, does that maybe mean we don't have to be quite as diligent in our, you know, our race to perfection on the compliance side?
I think it depends on who you ask and what the risk tolerance is, and whether your risk tolerance is more focused on compliance risk or reputational risk or financial or operational. I think that's a big piece of it. I know that's conversations that I've been in the room for of how much does violation cost us, which is it was a question that I very quickly realized that when I said historically it's $15,000 to $30,000 for a first time offense in our region, and saw some of the bean counters eyes get real big, go, ooh, I'll make that bet. And then go, okay, no, hold on. There's more to it. There's the reputation cost. There's the increased scrutiny. There's the labor cost of managing the violation, all those fun pieces, kind of the old, the iceberg diagram where that fine is just the small tip of the iceberg poking up, and there's a whole lot more cost below it. Allegedly, I may have heard of one or two utilities that spent orders of magnitude more bringing in help to try to recover reputation and compliance posture after completely missing on a number of standards. So it's something that can be very tempting, especially short-sighted, or in a period we're going through right now where debt servicing is so expensive and the interest rates are so high that you're looking for everywhere you can to cut a dime. It can be a real tempting endeavor to go towards. But I know there have been history in the past where somebody was found maybe not willfully violating compliance, but kind of turning a blind eye. And it hasn't gone well, I would say.
Brian, I'll give you a chance to weigh in on this topic and respond to Leonard and Nick. And then I have some opinions, but I'm saving those for later.
We're all excited to hear those. I know there's a lot of debate and a lot of discussion lately, you know, about it. And one of the things I always go back to is you know, do folks have a strong kind of foundational understanding of internal controls? It seems to, at least a lot of the narratives and a lot of things that have come from the regions and from NERC, kind of missed the mark. I mean, I remember the days when we were at WEC and internal control programs, you know, the whole internal controls thing was just coming about, and there's just a lot of things that were just not well understood. And I still have that question based on what I've seen. But bottom line is you can have plenty of controls. You can still be found non-compliant. Those controls may not extend to, when we talk about the context of performance evidence, the control may be to ensure that you're doing, you know, say it's a periodic task, you know, monthly patch management that kicks off. But do you have additional controls or other things in place to ensure that it's done correctly or completely, that it's done accurately? I think a lot of people really just say, oh, I got a control to make sure I don't miss my 35-day patch window. Cool. But that doesn't mean that all of those follow-on activities are done correctly. So I have those kind of concerns as well, that controls are great. I'm not totally convinced that the overemphasis on them is great for industry, largely because of a lot of still lingering misunderstanding about what they do, what they're for, and all of that. So those are my initial thoughts.
Yeah, and you betrayed your bias there by using the word overemphasis on internal controls. So I just wanted to point that out there, but it's okay. It's okay. we're all friends here, so you can do that. You know, the interesting thing is although NERC and the regions have not clearly defined what the internal controls are supposed to do, one of the things I think is very obvious that they have mentioned is internal controls for compliance. So controls that mitigate risks that you will be non-compliant. So in some ways, it's counterintuitive to think that, well, we're going to do controls and then we might be non-compliant because we're doing the controls instead of compliance. They're really the same thing, or at least they should be if they're properly mm-hmm. executed. To counter that, I will point out that FERC in their policy on compliance actually stated that just because you have a violation doesn't mean you don't have a good compliance program. And so you can extrapolate that out or interpolate that depending on your perspective and say, just because you had a violation doesn't mean you don't have good controls, because you could still have a violation in the presence of good controls. So, but I guess, you know, coming back to the audit perspective, the concept of doing the internal controls evaluation, identifying good controls with an entity, and then maybe reducing audit scope, does that produce risk? I guess we're revisiting the question a little bit, but maybe, kind of go back for another round and let other people react. Let it all go back to you, put you on the spot again, let you react to what others have said and, you know, what I've preached from my pulpit here.
Sure. I mean, I think you just illustrated with your example that, interpreting kind of FERC's position, just because you have a violation doesn't mean you don't have good controls. I mean, I think the fallacy there would be assuming that an internal control is 100%, successful rate. And that's certainly not the case. They're all going to have some manner of human performance issues, technology failures. Something's going to happen at some point that will cause an exception. And that control will not perform as intended in that scenario. Does that mean you have a violation? I guess that depends on the sampling methodology of your audit. But I concur that, this approach, this idea of saying, well, we're going to reduce audit scope because we see you have internal controls in place. So all these areas where, we like what we're hearing on your internal controls, we're not going to even look at those standards. And I think that's a disservice to everything that's been done before.
I guess the concept of testing controls, right? We can go there, and I'll throw this up as a jump ball, whoever wants to take it, or a drop hockey puck, choose your metaphor there. Testing of controls, shouldn't that be what the audit is, right? If they're going to focus on internal controls, they should be testing those controls, which would require them to look at some performance evidence, I would think. Thoughts?
Yeah. I'll chime in. You're right, Steve. The testing is really what it should be. Again, go back to my previous comment about kind of misunderstanding the place, you know, where these controls are, how they're designed, what's the control objective, is all of this stated. Testing of those controls, absolutely. That should be the audit. But I definitely on board with what Leonard's saying. I felt very strongly about this, seeing how a lot of the audits have been reduced scope significantly over the last few years, and even more so the level of rigor placed in the what do we call it, de-scoped audits, the lessened scope, whatever. There's a term for it. The level of rigor is not there either. And so it's kind of doubly frustrating because, yeah, you've got three standards in scope, but they give those a light touch. And, oh, internal controls, yay. Like, it's dare I say, the shiny object that seems to distract from where the real work is getting done. So it's quite frustrating to see that because we do talk to entities. We have had clients who talk to other entities. We still know lots of folks in the industry that are like, yeah, we lost a couple of headcount because our management doesn't see the need anymore because the audits have been really easy and, you know, we haven't been hit with, you know, these really tough questions. So I think there's a couple of things in there, but back to your original question, if they do it right, then certainly controls testing should be the starting point for those audits.
Oh, I'd say, Brian, that actually reminds me of kind of back in the day when we were at WEC and even some of the good kids, they were trying to do the right thing. You'd still hear them, particularly when their executives were in the room, talking about how they wanted to right size their compliance. They didn't need to gold plate everything. But when things aren't getting looked at, it's real hard to tell what's gold plated versus what's brass, or somebody just got a can of spray paint. And when you go out and you make a business case for why you need to go do these things, whether it's on the security, the reliability, or the compliance side, any of those three sides of it, that can really come back and really undermine somebody's their credibility in the organization. So like losing headcount, losing budget, even losing the ability to get that back when the pendulum eventually does swing back.
Well, so there's an old adage that says what gets measured gets done. So if you stop measuring, things have a tendency to slack off. So I wonder if perhaps we'll see a little boomerang action in the industry. If audits are getting light in some regions, entities perhaps will slack off a little bit, maybe apply a little less rigor. What's the likelihood that's going to boomerang back and we're going to end up having some violations and they'll have to ratchet up the audits again perhaps?
It's a vicious cycle.
That's been the advice I've given when I've heard inklings that performance might happen. Don't be the one that gets caught not doing it. That's been my advice.
You know, the pendulum can swing, but it's got to be driven by something, whether it's an incident event or some other type of finding where, oh, these standards weren't looked at. There could be any number of things that could force the pendulum to swing. But I think, honestly, a lot of the entities that we talk to appreciate the hard audits and the deep dives. There's a desire out there in the industry, like, hey, we're doing all this work. We have all these, call them zero defect requirements, and we're busting our asses to get them done. Come and look at it because we want to know if we're doing, if it's good enough. So I've heard a lot of grumblings and frustrations that, hey, we're doing all this work, and then, again, back to the measure, what's measured gets done. It's not getting looked at. So there's a lot of folks that are kind of like, why are we pushing this so hard now?
Well, I want to thank you for joining me to have this little discussion today. Certainly a topic that we'll keep an eye on. And as always, we're watching audit trends and violation trends and things of that nature. So it'll be interesting to see if the push for internal controls has the effect that it was intended to have, whatever that may be. I want to thank everyone for joining, and we'll see you on a future edition of Direct Connect.
Not only is Direct Connect available to listen to, you can also watch each episode on our YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/@ArcherU. If you're interested in who we are and what we do, you can head on over to our website at archerint.com. You can also follow us on our social media platforms, Archer International on Facebook, Archer Energy Solutions LLC on LinkedIn, and at Archer SEC on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and check back every other week for brand new episodes of Direct Connect.